Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media.
Hello, everyone, and don't worry, this is the podcast that also couldn't score on Logan Thompson. It's time to do a little post-game two stargazing. Mark, how you feeling, buddy?
Oh, not that great. 0-2, not where we were predicting. Team actually hasn't looked that bad, but 0-2 is kind of hard to get back from.
Yeah, it's you know, I we talked after game one about how it wasn't really a panic game, right? There wasn't really anything you saw that would tell you. And we'll start. That's a great question. So after game one, I think the consensus was, it was a tough game, close game. We'll see. How do you feel after game two, right? Once again, close but not quite. Once again, in the loser column. I assume we're worried now, right?
I'm worried just because the sheer bounce of the puck means that Dallas is going to have to get a couple breaks here in order to get through. Look at game two. The team wasn't necessarily dominant, but they were leading in expected goals, except for this flurry of a power play where Chandler Stephenson missed a wide open net, kind of skewed everything. But outside of that, Dallas played a slightly better game than Vegas did.
Yeah, it's kind of funny when you look at it, like the 5-on-5. Just got it in front of me. The 5-on-5 expected goals. They were Dallas was 182 to 133 in game one. It got even better. It's 2.59 to 1.45 in game two, right? So almost 65% of the goals at 5-on-5. And it's one of those classic regression things. If this were an 82 game season, I would be banging the don't panic drum, because what this tells you is that more often than not, the regression monster is looming and everything's going to be fine. But
how does the regression monster feel about 4 out of 5, right?
Yeah, you've got to show up real soon. And it also, I think it does Vegas a disservice. And they have been able to manufacture offense on the power play. And it's not like Dallas has given them a ton of chances, right? But they went, 2 for 2, 2 for 3 in game one. They have gotten big goals at big times when they've been able to get on the power play. As much as you look at an 82 game season and kind of shrug and say, well, that may not be the most predictable thing in the world. Like this time of year in the playoffs, you're starting to ask the questions about, like, this is when you can exert more influence on matchups. And this is when you do more team specific game planning. This is when you start to look at it and say, well, we're seeing a pretty distinct thing happening. It may not be enough of a sample to call it a trend, but like, through two games, Vegas has found a goal with the extra man when they needed one. And that's kind of the difference in the series right now. And it's something that is, you can't really ignore it, even though some larger scale stats tell you, you maybe should, but like you said, right, this it's a whole different thing to expect things to level out over 82 than over the next, seven game series.
Yeah. I mean, in essence, you're talking about a coin flip. As long as Vegas can create a coin flip the rest of the way out, they're in pretty good shape.
And, yeah.
I mean, you take a look at what happened in game two. I mean, Stephenson misses a wide open net. So that's a goal that probably should have been scored. But the second goal, they took advantage of a good opportunity, got one over Ottinger's pad. The first goal, they took advantage of a Stars mistake, one of the few ones that we've had in the series. But that was kind of it. The Stars had their opportunities. You had Wyatt Johnston coming down, down the crease with the ability to put one in, and he caught an arm. You take a look at Jason Robertson had an open look in front of the net on a puck that was obviously off the ice, and he gets a little too much under it and it goes over the net instead of in the net. These are the types of chances that when you play a tight game like Vegas plays, you have to take advantage of it. And if you don't take advantage of it, you're going to get burned. And that's what happened to the Stars.
Yeah, and we're going to get into in a little bit more depth there. But before we do, Mark, Bet Online is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and the NHL playoffs. At all the latest stats, news, and scores available to your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet Online, where the game starts. I think I want to come back to, you know, talking about, it's not just that this Dallas is getting the chances. It's think about the names that you just mentioned, right? It's Robertson, it's Johnston. Like, it's not that, you know, some of the, I mean, Robertson has two goals, right? Which comprises the bulk of Dallas's offense this series so far, but it's the right guys are getting the right opportunities. It's just a combination of, you know, big saves from Logan Thompson and, you know, I guess big play from the Vegas defense writ large is kind of preventing those from converting.
Yeah. I mean, it's so weird because you get into this, you know, who's performing in the playoffs and this guy's soft and that guy's built for the playoffs and all these narratives that end up getting built. And then they just kind of disappear because, you know, if you take a look at what was talked about last year, it's all about, well, Jason Robertson hasn't, he's good for the regular season, but he's not there for the playoffs. And all of a sudden, mm-hmm. Robertson puts a couple in. He puts a stone on his
butt. He was good against Vegas in the conference finals. Yeah.
Yeah. He's playing kind of the way we expect. And all of a sudden, that narrative's just, you know, blowing in the wind. And so a lot of this is just people talking to hear their voice.
Yeah. It's just a, and that's what makes it so hard to talk about, right? Because in a lot of ways, even though they are down 2-0, like, you can still make a case that this is a series just based on the fact that, like, you know, if this team had gotten literally anything out of, you know, the Duchesne trio in game two or Johnson's trio in game two or a fourth line that's been productive, or, you know, if they'd had a signature Miro game or Thomas Harley, like if this team had gotten anything out of a collection of guys, then the series would be tied right now. If not, you know, there's a world in which it's 2-0 Dallas, but it's not. And I think you have to really start thinking about, in my opinion, and I don't think it's necessarily panic mode, but I think that we're at the point where, like, I think Pete DeBoer needs to make some decisions behind the bench with how he's utilizing his players. Do you see this as a, like, kind of shrug and hope that things level out moment, Mark, or do you think that it's time to make a change?
I think two games in and going on the road, I think you have to at least seriously consider making changes, and you have to start breaking down what's happening to these individual lines. And some of these are things that people have brought up already after game two. I mean, I think you need to seriously take a look at what's going on with Joe Pavelski.
Yeah. That's kind of the one on my mind.
Yeah, and you take a look at the, you know, I watch the national broadcast, so I'm hearing what they're saying. They're, you know, when you talk about Jason Robertson's goal in game two, they were talking, well, everybody's collapsing in on Pavelski, and so that opens up shooting lanes for since Robertson, and Dallas scores, and so yay Pavelski, but you have to take a look at the overall game and the number of times that Pavelski's been caught. His speed is certainly as big an issue as Ryan Suter's was last year. And you start talking about what's going on with Roope Hintz and that top line, and you have to take into account that this is a three-person line, and it needs to be clicking with all three guys. And it's been a problem throughout the season, but it's exacerbated here in the playoffs.
Yeah, and especially so far in the series, it'd be different if the power play was clicking. And you could say, yeah, maybe Pavelski's taken some off the top end at even strength, but he's got a couple of tallies on the power play. He's got a couple of points with the extra man, but that's, you know, Vegas is doing a good job staying out of the box, and Dallas isn't converting really on the power play either. So I think you're right. And especially well, like
and even here, you know, with Pavelski, I see no problem with the role he's playing on the power play. I think he's doing exactly what he should, but this is just a limited number of minutes a game. And this series is a series, you know, outside of Vegas's, you know, kind of dominance on the power play, which doesn't happen all that often. It's a series that's playing at 5-on-5, and the Stars need to deal with 5-on-5 primarily. And that's where that top line's getting, you know, not necessarily bulldozed, but they certainly aren't performing like a top line.
Well, and it fits the general theme, right? And what is Vegas trying to do, right? They're collapsing in the middle. They're blocking a lot of shots. They are a very, very large team, right? So they're using a lot of their, you know, their bulk to keep down the number of scoring chances. And despite, you know, we talked about the expected goals modeling, and this is just even strength because I've got it in front of you. We talked about how it's like, you know, 259 to 145 Dallas. And if you look at scoring chances, Natural Stat Trick has it at like 30 scoring chances for versus 16 against if you're the Stars. But if you scroll just a little bit further and look at the high danger stuff, that's 12-9. And so Vegas is doing, and this is again, over 82, it's not super sustainable. Dallas's PDO was like 88, you know, 0.882, right? So like over 82 games, you'd look at this and say, well, Dallas is wrecking them, but they're not playing it. So this is where you get into Vegas seems to be taking, you know, kind of making concerted efforts to take away the really dangerous stuff. They're clogging the middle, they're blocking shots. And to your point about Pavelski, this is where his, you know, liabilities and I think speed come to play. And like we've talked about Robertson in the past as well. And speed isn't, you know, he's done tremendous work and his agility is, his skating is no longer a deficiency. Like I don't think that it's accurate to say that Robertson is a bad or a limited skater. But when you look at a three-man unit, which is what we're talking about, you've got Hintz who is, you know, he can put him down, right? He can go. And then I think that when you have a team that is as good as Vegas and as long as Vegas and as committed defensively as Vegas, it all of a sudden becomes more of a challenge knowing that really the only guy on that line that can beat you for pace is Rupe Hintz. And not only is he the only guy that can beat you for pace, you're probably looking at Pavelski this time and saying like he cannot, definitively cannot. And so I think that, you know, Robertson was a point of game player over the regular season. He scored twice, although one of them was off of a Logan Stankoven play. But I think that it's impossible to look at how the production of that line has changed and not wonder, well, what if, you know, F3 was a little bit fleeter of foot? Would they be able to attack quickly enough to prevent Vegas from kind of settling in defensively? And would that open up some of those? Would we start to see, like, you know, I don't have any like long-term data to say this, but would we see something that has, you know, more than, you know, up to 30, if you get 30 scoring chances, is that high danger number closer to 20 than 12, right?
Yeah. And I mean, I think the whole point here is that the Stars need to figure out a way to make Vegas uncomfortable in their defensive zone. And
that's a really good way.
Pavelski doesn't do that. I think the Stars need to concentrate on guys who can, you know, perform as an F1, get on the puck, have enough support from F2 in order to make that first pass not just be an easy pass. And then the thing that's really bothered me, and I think I mentioned this after Game 1, is the Stars are not winning board battles. And when you don't win board battles, you're all of a sudden chasing back. And it's also something I noticed in the third period on the second game. The Stars down the stretch, every single time they'd get an offensive faceoff, they would lose it. And so regardless of the, you know, sure, you know, Vegas wasn't making a big push to go up and create offense out of this, but it meant that every time that the Stars got something that is potentially good, you know, an offensive zone faceoff, you win it, all of a sudden you're set up and you start grinding away and getting your chances. Instead of doing that, the Stars are chasing back, they're regrouping, and they're trying to get a zone entry. And you know, as we've seen, Vegas is defending that blue line real well. It's making it very difficult for the Stars to do anything but dump the puck in and chase. And with an ineffective forecheck, if you're dumping and chasing and the first guy from Vegas gets to it and has an easy outlet, it's not working.
Yeah. And the faceoff, it plays into their strengths as a team, right? I think it also plays into some of their it masks some of their weaknesses, which is they've got a lot of pieces that they're reintegrating into the lineup late. Being able to keep the puck along the wall, to dump it and chase, like those are simpler things, and simple, not bad. This isn't a negative, but they are more straightforward tasks tactically. So if you are trying to work a Tomas Hertl into the lineup, if you are trying to get used to having Mark Stone back, like if you're having to shuffle things around, it is easier to do that when you're not asking for as much complexity in the offense. And so Dallas being kind of unable to get out of that style is helping keep the pressure off an area where you think Vegas might be a little bit vulnerable, right? Which is that cohesion and team play. And I'd also say that, like, this isn't just talking in theory about, oh, chance is chance. You know, look at the Hertl goal from game one, right? That is a clean loss offensive zone faceoff.
Again, I think Vegas' strategy here is to take the air out of the game a little bit, capitalize on chances. And if you create a low event brand of hockey at this point, one good play, one bad bounce is going to be the difference. And when you're up 2-0, or even if you're a team that's working guys in or not necessarily as deep a team or not as skilled a team, that's how you win games and that's how you win series, by making it that coin flip. And I think Vegas has proven they have guys who know how to take advantage of the opportunities that they get. When they have a chance, they're going to, they know what to do with the puck. That's what killed Dallas.
Yeah. And we've talked about this in the past. I think that is also the very thin line difference between having an elite roster and having an elite player, right? Having a guy I don't think that it is unfair to say, in terms of an offensive kind of playmaking scoring profile, that Vegas's high end is not much better, mind you. It's not like they're outclassed, but I would argue that Jack Eichel is probably the most skilled player on either team. And yeah, I think that's reasonable. Dallas is still waiting for their depth to matter, because right now you've got a bunch of units that are getting dealt with, right? And it's still, we've yet to get one of those, you know, the Edmonton sequence where a series of lines score all in a row and you just, all of a sudden, you're underwater. In Vegas, it seems like they've been able to take depth out of the equation. And like you said, it almost reminds me of how an underdog plays in soccer. And that goals in soccer are so obscenely variance driven, right? Goals in soccer are almost, even by the best players, there's always an element of fluke, right? So if you're the worst team, you want as little to happen as possible, because each individual goal is like a coin flip. So if there's only going to be two chances in a game, then if you're the worst team, you've got a much better chance of getting one of those two chances and scoring than you do if there are 10 chances in a game. And it seems like Vegas is really content to say, we're going to do whatever we can to remove the high danger stuff, keep this as calm as possible. And honestly, last night, right, it's 3-1 final score, right, with the empty netter. But it was, Vegas seemed like they were pretty content when it was 0-0, pretty content when it was 1-0, at no point did they seemed like they were fine with those one goal margins, because of that idea of, we're not letting a lot happen, so if something happens and we take advantage of it, we'll be fine. And to this point, through two games of the series, when something has happened, it's the I think it was even the sequence before Vegas's second goal, right? Dallas had a lot of pressure, almost scored, Vegas goes down the other one, all of a sudden it's 2-1, right? And Vegas has been content to say, we're gonna do our best to gum it up, ride out the storm, and then when we counterpunch, we're going to be successful.
Yeah, and to tell you the truth, I don't think the Stars have looked bad or uncomfortable in that situation either.
Not outside of the first.
They just haven't had the bounce. And to tell you the truth, the first period of game two was probably the other way, especially the first 10 minutes. The Stars were really on their toes and took it to Vegas, but again, I think Vegas was ready to weather the storm is kind of the way they put it, and they did.
And a big part of that is Logan Thompson, right? We are once again watching Dallas get goalied, and some of that is the quality of play around him. And some of that is he's playing very well, and they're going to have to find a way. You said it earlier in the podcast, and I think it's so, so very critical. Like, Dallas has yet to make Logan Thompson uncomfortable.
Yeah. And I don't think Thompson didn't strike me as somebody who was standing on their head. I think it's much more, there were a handful of pucks where Dallas got into prime scoring positions and they weren't able to convert. It's not like Thompson was looking the exact opposite way and putting, pushing across the crease to just barely get a tip on it to keep it from going in the top corner.
Yeah, no, I think we're using him. This is very much like the Jake Ottinger discussion over the course of the season. It's like right now we're using Logan Thompson as a stand-in for the team defensive concept. But I mean, he made 20 of 21, 952 in game one, or sorry, in game two. I apologize. So it's one of those like, yeah, it was 952 in game one, or sorry, in game two. And then he was, as I scroll, he was, only 897 in game one. So it's not like he's been, capital E elite, but he's been better than the guy he's playing against, right?
Yeah, I mean, the pucks found a way to hit him. So it's not like if I'm the Stars, I'm it's in my head that says I can't get it past Logan Thompson. It's more along the lines of, well, I need to make sure that if I'm at the point, Vegas is pushing the puck up to the point and our guys at the point need to find a way that they can get the puck into the mess in front of the net, whether that's a direct shot or whatever. There are certain strategies that Vegas is employing to clog things up. And so Stars need to figure out how to get it into those dangerous areas and then not get obliterated once the puck gets there.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, they haven't managed that yet, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're averaging two goals a game. But you lose in essence two 1-goal games, and it's a matter of, creating your chances and taking advantage of it. And at this point, they need to do more of that than less of that, because one or two bad bounces and all of a sudden you're down 3-0 or even 3-1, and then you're in a must win situation.
Yeah, and that's the unfortunate bit about the playoffs. Is there a world in which Dallas rattles off four in a row and we kind of look back on this and laugh? Yeah, it's totally possible. There's nothing, we have not seen anything like foundationally in either of these two games that say this is a team that cannot compete. This isn't Carolina Islanders, right? Or even Florida, Tampa Bay, where one team clearly has a notch above the other. And you're looking at it and it's much more a question of like, how can this team get back into it? Like we know what Dallas needs to do to get back into this series. That's not that issue. The issue is like, can they / will they? Right.
Yeah.
And some of that is bounce driven. But also some of it is you make your own luck at one point. It is harder to start getting those bounces down low when you are not getting the puck to the goalie, right? It's harder to do that.
Yeah,
and it's going to get a little bit harder. We don't. Oh, sorry, please.
No, I was going to say there's one other thing that we really haven't touched on here, and more hockey stats throws out in the morning of every game day. They throw out team records, odds, but they also throw out a list of coaches' records versus other coaches. And Cassidy is 17, 18 wins versus DeBoer 6 in head-to-head matchups. At a certain point, there may be some coaching issues here. That's a decent number of games. It's not a limited sample size.
Yeah.
And Cassidy is definitely doing something that's causing Pete DeBoer's systems to have issues.
No, that's a good point. If it's always a problem, like we've talked about short sample size. Yeah. Once you get enough games, you have to look at it and say, well, there's something, if nothing else, and amateur psychology alert. So stat heads, hide your ears and eyes. If nothing else, Cassidy's teams, this Vegas team, despite the press, despite winning the Western Conference, despite everything that wins into Dallas this season, as impressive as they were, despite all of that, Vegas has not deviated from their game plan. You know, they're not overawed, right? They've approached this series very much with the mentality of like, we're going to do a thing and we're going to see if they can beat us, versus falling into the bad team trap sometimes. Bad team, not a bad team, they're an excellent team, but falling into the lower seed trap sometimes, which is, well, we're the lower seed, therefore we need to change everything to try and get these guys, right? And if nothing else, Cassidy's, there is a confidence there. Like they know how to beat Dallas. And until proven otherwise, right, they know how to beat Dallas.
Last year in the playoffs, as much as went wrong, the Stars still took it to six games. Yep. So, you know, at this point, there's certain parts that say, let's at least get one.
Yeah.
Because it's been locked down so much. And so, you know, I don't know that the Stars are going to be in a position in this series where they can, just on superior talent or superior anything, win a game. They're going to have to make some luck, because if it's just straight coin flip, the odds are going to be extremely high that they are not going to make it out of the first round.
Yeah, and it's going to get harder, because we don't know why. It's playoff time, so they're probably reattaching limbs and they'll be air quotes fine for game three. But both Radek Foxa and Mason Marchment left game two at various points. So there's some injury concerns there. Again, as we are recording this Friday morning, there's nothing definitive about either player. And, you know, this unfortunately isn't 2023, and Marchment he scored a goal. He's been a productive presence so far in the postseason. That would not be a fun loss.
Yeah. I mean, he's certainly the only person who's scored a goal on that second line. And the second line is really something that we haven't talked about much here, but if you going into this series, you had to think that Duchesne, Sagan, Marchment line was an advantage for the team, and it kind of disappeared. And
it's funny too, because I remember, you know, there have been a couple of instances in both games where you've got, you know, Duchesne is waiting 1 minute too long to pass, or they're getting close. There was a really nice give and go down low between Duchesne and Sagan, right? But it's just like you said, they're not. The style that Vegas is playing seems like it is particularly perplexing for Matt Duchesne, because it is forcing a directness that doesn't seem to be in his comfort zone, right? Like it's kind of his tendency to look for perfect and to kind of freelance a little bit, which is such a benefit in most matchups. In this particular matchup, Duchesne seems like he's really struggling to find the right balance between, you know, creating space and making plays and just like taking what is there. Yeah. Like sometimes you need to put a shot on it.
Yeah. It's right now, it's just a matter of, you know, the pass that is there is catching the tip of a stick. And so I don't think it's that far off, but that's the style that Vegas plays. And so if you need to make a perfect pass in order to be successful, you're going to have trouble.
Yeah. They make you be perfect, and they've got the experience and the structure to do that. And, you know, I think that's where, whether it's Marchment or, you know, whether he comes out, like, I think that's where this, and we all know this, right? But that's where this series is going to hinge, right? Is can Dallas get those multiple line contributions rolling?
Before we sign off, let's at least speak a little to the defense, just because I think there were some question marks with the defense, especially Thomas Harley after the first game. He had a little bit of an off game. Game two, I thought the defense was fine.
Yeah,
I think Haskinen looked really good. I thought Harley looked really good. I had no problems with Lindell. I had no problems with Tanev. The board did a really good job of isolating Nils Lundqvist against the fourth line of Vegas. And he was, if you take a look at the fancy stats, they're pretty dominant on his time on ice. And so that changes, though, because now we're going into Vegas. They get last change. So, you know, Lundqvist may see even more limited time.
Yeah, which it's one of those, like, congratulations, Pete DeBoer, for learning how to tie his shoes with one hand tied behind his back when he is the one that tied his hand behind his back. We are we are seeing some of the, and some of this is maybe just the limitations in the player. We're not going to, the Lundqvist situation is going to require a lot more time than we've got, but you know, he is doing a good job working around limitations that he himself might have created.
Yeah. What do you think the Stars need to do to get back to Dallas?
Oof. I think I got to be honest. I think ride or die, they have to play the same way they played in game 2. And I don't think, not just because I don't think that there are a lot of, you know, maybe you call up, I think you mentioned in the pre-call, like Texas is 2-0 in their play-in and Maverick Bourque has been fantastic and we may have some guys that are hurt. So maybe, and I don't know if he's roster eligible, right? But the really, truly at the end of the day, I think if you're Dallas, it is time to do something. And maybe it's just more of a timeshare where you spot start Johnston with Robertson and Hintz a little bit more. But I think that it is time to shift some 5-on-5 minutes on the top line away from Joe Pavelski. Because I do think the one area where you're looking at that there really is kind of a clear issue is with that, the pace on that first line. So I think maybe you tweak some minutes and find a way. If you can get Johnston out there for five to seven minutes with the top line, does that maybe get you a goal? But, you know, win or lose, good or bad, and this isn't necessarily good advice, Mark, but I think that given the composition of Dallas and the composition of Vegas, I think Dallas's kind of best hope is to play game 2 over and over and over again and hope that they get more bounces.
Yeah. And
I don't know what else you can do.
Well, I think the team also kind of takes on a road persona, and that leaves me with a little bit of hope. I know Jake Ottinger likes being the black hat, and I think
big time rebound in game 2 from Otter.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's it. You make a few tweaks here and there. You know, if Maverick Bourque, AHL Player of the Year, just announced yesterday. So. I see no issue with him coming up. Texas doesn't play until May 2nd, and so there's a full week here. So there's no reason why he can't be up with the main club for 2-3 games before they would even need him in Texas. So,
yeah, and especially like if we get news today, particularly looking at Marchand, because I think for Foxa you kind of roll with you've got Delandre, you've got Craig Smith, like you've got some options that are more like for like there. But I think that if you're Dallas and if Marchman is going down, I think your two options are either to, you know, pull in Delandria or Craig Smith, and it's just more you kind of distribute more of those minutes. Maybe that's how you get Johnston on the top line a little bit more. Like you kind of favor your high end a little bit more. Or if you're really feeling froggy, you slide in Maverick Bourque as a like for like replacement and see if he can spark that second line.
Fully agree. Okay, well, yeah. Fingers crossed. thank God it's played on ice because the stats don't look good.
They sure don't. And it's clutch crunch time for a team that has high expectations. And this is the unfortunate downside of kind of finally graduating the, you know, up and coming phase. They have up and come, and now we have higher expectations, and we're going to see if they can meet them. But I will say one thing that always meets expectations, Mark, is your insight and commentary. KT doing the hard work on the back end as well. No matter what the on-ice situation is, you guys are always ready to come over the boards as needed. This has been Stargazing, presented by Bet Online. Podcast over.